Riser, thanks for coming back on the show. You're becoming a normal guest now.
That's all right. I have fun hanging out and talking fishing, so it's what I do when I'm not on a podcast anyway, so might as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of weird, though, because we just recently found out that we got history together, and we didn't even realize that we had, you know, it's funny, but what, probably like 20-something years ago, I booked your band to come play in Panama City, and you guys stayed the night with me and my friends at their house.
Super small world stuff there, man. I mean, you want to talk about, like, what are the odds of that happening and then it coming – you can't even call it full circle because this is a completely different circle that is fishing now. So yeah, that's pretty wild. Who knows how many ways that could have gone. We wouldn't have ever put that together too. So it's kind of interesting that we even put it together. So yeah.
Wild. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it was such a crazy time though. Playing shows like that, booking bands like that. Cause I remember, you know, when I was 16, 17 years old, it was just like you're constantly trying to find bands to bring into your to play with for two reasons. One, you know, to bring something different to your town, but also to like make connections so you could eventually play shows in other places. Because I'm pretty sure you guys were from like what Northern Alabama at the time.
Yep, North Alabama. Like we kind of migrated to Nashville and was a Nashville band. But like to your point, like doing that kind of stuff, doing the work and the promoting the shows like you were talking about during that time with internet being barely a tool then, it was a lot of work. You had to do a lot of footwork to get those bands in and make it all happen. So it was a much different thing then.
Well, it was weird because I can't remember what the site was, but it was a site that would like give you lists of like local bands and areas. And I remember I went in and I was looking for local bands that were within like Florida, Georgia, Alabama, and places like that. And somehow I found Love Is Red.
Really?
Because people would just put you on there because I was up there. You know, that's how I found bands like 710 Split and, you know, whatever, like all these crazy bands that we used to play with back in the day. And that's how I found Love Is Red. I had no idea you guys were like I didn't even know what hardcore really was because you know, to me, it was like Snapcase and Sick of It All. Yeah. And, you know, I didn't know that there was this other thing going on. You know, I mean, obviously, I knew like Stretch Armstrong was, but I didn't realize that was where everything was kind of going to.
Sure.
And when I heard your guys' band, I'm like, holy shit. You know, this is different. It's not, I don't know. It's more melodic, but it was crazy. And all of a sudden, like, I started listening to Shai Halud and like the whole, like, Poison the Wealth started coming around. And, you know, then the whole scene, everything changed. Everyone started going to like this hardcore metal, eventually turning into screamo. I mean, like Under Oath started playing with us a lot, playing up in like Florida. The band that I eventually got kicked out of, you used to tour with them, Embraced. They had some minor success. I mean, it was just crazy. It was a crazy time. Like I forget how old I am until like, you know, like I talked to you. I'm like, Jesus Christ, like that was so long ago.
And then
all of a sudden I started listening to all those bands again. I'm like, man, that was such a fun time in my life. I went to like a whole. I listened to like every single Stretch Armstrong album because those guys were like, they were like from like North South Carolina. And they used to play around a lot.
Yeah,
I used to listen to them all the time. I mean, just it's such a great time, dude.
Yeah, that's the whole chunk of my like youth era, you know, teenage into my like early 20s was bands on the road, booking shows, playing shows in a van, do it all over again.
Yeah, I guess you're getting ready because I was talking to Jonathan Hoffman the other day. He used to play guitar in Embraced. And I was asking, hey, do you remember a guy named Adam Riser from, Love Is Red? He's like, yeah, I do. I'm like, dude,
really?
Like, we're kind of fishing buddies now. He's like, oh man, we're getting ready to, a bunch of us getting ready to play Furnace Fest here pretty soon. And I guess it's going to be like a late 90s, early 2000, like hardcore reunion.
Yeah, I'm calling it the Nostalgia Fest because that's what it seems like it is for most of the people attending and even for a lot of the people playing, too.
Well, I don't know how it's going to be. Like, I mean, if it's something like people have been doing for a while, like, I mean, obviously guitar players and bass players say, I worry about, like, the vocalist. I mean, if you haven't been screaming like that for a while and all of a sudden you're 40 years old, dude, you might blow your asshole out trying to scream like that.
Hey, look. Hopefully, like, I bet a lot of them are just thinking, like, hey, all I got to do is make it count for, like, one set, and then I don't have to worry about it for another 20 years type of thing. It's not like they got to go on the road. It's the ones that got to go and do multiple shows that you probably got to worry about that. But I'm sure everyone's like, oh, I can at least do one show, you know?
Oh, cool. Well, enough catching back up about, you know, old school hardcore days.
Yeah.
How you been? Did you just recently fish here? Down in South Carolina, the Hobie event not too long ago?
Yeah, just been busy, man. Been on the road. I feel like the last 2 months, I feel like the whole spring. And trust me, I'm not complaining. This is the way that I scheduled them, this way I like it. But I feel like I've for sure spent probably 75, 80% of my last few months on the road or away from home fishing. And yeah, last week was spent in Anderson, South Carolina, right there on the Georgia border, Lake Hartwell. Was in Hartwell for a week. Yeah.
How'd that go for you? I saw some people did some, you know, like, usually like any other tournament, some people did well, some people didn't do so well.
Yeah.
You know, but it looked like it was a fun event. Had some young blood up there winning it. Like,
yeah.
How'd you do?
Yeah, Ewing won that one. Man, it was a fun place. That was my first time at Hartwell. I was encouraged by friends that know I love fishing, like the deep clear water fisheries, and it's a spotted bass, blueback herring lake too. And I tend to like those lakes that I've been on that had that. So all my friends were like, oh, you need to go to Hartwell. So I went to Hartwell, and sure enough, I loved it. It's usually you go to a lake that is supposed to have big fish, and you're like, man, where are all these big fish that people are talking about? This was opposite. I got there and I was like, I had no idea these largemouth were so big. Like, so our house was me, Russ Snyder's, Christine Fisher, Cody Milton, and Josh Sharp. And we all went out there and just had a ball on the lake, like all week. Like, everyone caught them, and we caught like big limits. We're like, oh, it's going to take a lot to win this tournament. And so we were having a blast out there. You can kind of do a whole bunch of different stuff on that fishery too. So we were all about it. And then we all kind of got turned upside down for all completely different reasons during the tournament, except for Cody. Cody did really well in that one, but all the rest of us were kind of sulking a little bit. And then that was myself included, ran into a couple mishaps there, but overall awesome place.
What do you think? Cause like, it kind of happened to me too. You think this is kind of like a weird time where it could be absolutely fire unless like a few things change? Cause you know, I know like some places the fish are going on beds, some of the fish are going off beds, some fish have been on beds. It's you know, like one day it can be great, and then the next minute you're having to look really hard to find them.
Regionally, there's kind of a short window of time during the post spawn that's kind of known as the post spawn funk, and it's like when the largemouth get done spawning before they either go out deep or they like kind of commit to being shallow to get back in the feeding mode. They kind of just are tight-lipped and beat up, and it can be kind of tough, and it's like a range of water temperatures, in my opinion, that the water's got to go more into summer temperatures for them to get out of that funk. And we're only a few days or a few weeks away, but you're going to hear a lot of people complaining that go out fishing right now because they run into some of that post-spawn. It's going to change fishery by fishery, but I think that attributes to most of like the late May struggles that some people may have. We like at the Hartwell house, like we all made mistakes that were mostly our own fault, not so much like bad fishing. So that's different when you don't fish clean, or you know you make some judgment errors and has nothing to do with figuring out the bite of the fish. But either way, you can get held back by a few different things.
Right. Well, cool, man. Well, the main reason we talked about this this past week and why I wanted to bring you on the show, but yeah, I know you're really big into sight fishing.
Absolutely.
And so, like, I'm getting, like, I don't mind doing it, but it's not, like, my porte. But, it got me in my tournament this weekend. You know, I had a plan A. I had a plan B. Now, my plans are kind of weird because we still have, like, those days you can wake up and it's cold. It's still finding warm water and finding, you know, whatever, where the fish want to be.
Yep.
And finding like those windows of opportunity when they want to feed, and so I guess like my strategy was this weekend was not expecting a bite early in the morning and waiting for the sun to come up, and then I know the fish were going to move up shallow to try to find a warmer water. So you know, when I woke up that morning, you know, water temps were like low 50s,
okay.
Air temps were like, you know, high 30s, early, you know, low 40s.
But it was
going to get warmer that day. You know what I mean? I'm talking about like at 6 o'clock in the morning. It was chilly. So I didn't really get a bite. You know, I caught one, you know, off the bat, you know, small, but like, I was like, I'm going to be patient. I'm going to stay in this spot. I'm going to wait it out. Cause I know once the sun comes up, they're going to be up here. And so I fished around, you know, I was going back out to like the deep grass, but I was never really leaving that area because I wanted to be first there when the bite turned on.
Right.
And then, you know, right around like 9 o'clock, still a little cool, I stand up in my kayak and dude, they're all around me. And
really?
I'm not exaggerating. Like, I mean, I'm like, it's just like every fish that if I could have caught these fish, I would have won the tournament hand down. Like, they were lethargic all around. They almost looked like they were bedding, but I knew they weren't bedding. The water's too cold.
Were they kind of levitating in the water? Or
yeah,
they were just
kind of
floating.
Kind of just floating, kind of levitating. Weren't really reacting to anything. Very spooky. Like they spooked very easy. But they were just there, like all around me. I'm just like, what do I got to do to make this happen? I couldn't make it happen. I tried my best, but it happened, just like I said, like around like 1 o'clock, I started catching my limit, around that time, but it was too late. I wasn't able to really get all the fish I need. I had to haul ass and catch fish, but it was tough because, I had a plan B and I had a plan, a plan C if something didn't work out. But because, it's hard for me to like, why am I going to leave this area? Like, I'm looking like big bass right in the face. Like I'm hovering over them, and I'm talking like the whole area. It was a cove, a small cove was just alive with bass and bait fish. And I'm just like, why would I leave this? But then again, if I would have left it, who knows what I could have found? I had some pretty good other spots that were, more like deeper, submerged grass and things like that. That, I did go out for a little bit and caught a few fish there. And then I'd come, but I always came back to the spot because I thought I was going to turn on. But, when you're looking at fish, when do you know? Like, what were you doing here? Like, I mean, like, I literally wasted hours.
It sounds like this is like, the first spawn or the really early spawn for you guys up north. And was the sun coming out when you were seeing those fish? Like, was that a sunny day? Sounds like those fish were sunning, literally just warming up in the sun as the sunlight was coming out. And when they're like that, they'll kind of levitate in the water column and literally just bask in the sun. And that's kind of their only MO, especially you'll see some big ones too. Those big females like the sun so they can warm their eggs and get ready. So that tells me, it sounds like your fish were in the general area or in the exact area where they were going to spawn.
Yeah,
but that day was all about kind of like waking up and getting warm and probably not about feeding. It sounds like you're in the right area, especially if the bait and stuff's in there too. But those fish that you saw sound like they were pretty tough to get after. I understand why you'd be tempted to fish for those fish and, tell yourself, why leave here if they're there. But man, sometimes they can be really tough to catch if they're just about to go on bed or if that's just not their MO that day. It may just be a fact of sliding over to the next pocket or area that's kind of like that and seeing if those fish are in a different mood. But I don't know, that they may not be able to. You may not be able to get those fish then.
Yeah. So what is like the like I said, like my biggest fear was someone was going to move up in that spot and see what I saw. And that was like, it was a weird game I was playing with myself. Cause it's like, not even a half a mile away. I had a good bite that was a little deeper. I was like just fishing like that deep grass and then they were pre-spawning out there. But still, it's just, when you're looking at that, like trying to break this, like, or trying to convince yourself to leave an area that's just so full of life. And I know I couldn't catch those. But I had a hard time leaving that cove because it was just like, it just seemed like the best spot.
Sounds like some jerk bait fish to me. Did you try jerk bait?
Dude, I tried everything, dude. I was so committed to it. And I just don't know, like when you're sight fishing, like, is there anything that like they kind of just turns, like, I guess let's just talk sight fishing just in general.
Sure.
Like, when to do it, when's a good time to do it? I mean, obviously it's not something you do just during the spawn.
No, it's very specific.
Spawn fishing, or sight fishing.
It's a completely different approach. You kind of not throw out everything you know about bass fishing, but you can kind of forget about all your textbook considerations because you're not targeting fish that are feeding. Like when I'm talking that I'm sight fishing, I'm talking about fish that are on a bed or they've already made a bed and they're around that. Like, that's what they're there for. Like those fish that you were around, it sounds like they hadn't made beds yet. Like, even though you technically saw them, that's not sight in fishing for them. That's not the sight fishing I'm talking about. I'm talking about a bass that is relating to a future bed, a current bed or some object there that they are spawning on, whether it's just the buck bass, maybe it's the buck and the female. On rare occasions, it'll be more than two bass on bed. But that's what I'm looking for. And it all starts with your coziest spring days. The days that feel good to be outside are the days that I want to be out there looking with minimal wind and sunshine. And the water temperature is going to vary. That's really where it all starts, is the water temperature too. But that's going to vary depending on what region you're in. So I hesitate to quote a certain temperature to look for, but down here, like around the Tennessee region, if I know that when those temperatures start happening in the shallows and I've got a sunny, warm day, I have to have my best polarized sunglasses. I have to be able to stand up in my kayak and either push pole or paddle like I'm going to stand up paddleboard style around. And I'm just going to slowly look around, like kind of hugging the bank and looking for fish swimming, looking for beds, looking for bait. But usually the bass go up there before you see the bluegill go up there or anything. So it's mostly just bass you're looking for during the first wave of spawners. And I'm just kind of cruising. And over time, you'll learn that certain pockets and the more tucked away spaces and the more wind protected and weather protected and wave protected areas, these are going to be the areas that the bass like to spawn in. And after you spot a few, if there's a few that are up there, after you spot a few, you kind of start knowing what to look for as far as the coloration of the fish that day, given the water color, or you know, maybe they're relating to wood way more than rock as far as what they want to start spawning on. So you start seeing trends in areas, but I'm just standing up and literally just looking for fish. And then after I find some on beds, that's when things change, or depending on how many I find on beds, that'll dictate whether I stop and work on some. But first things first, you absolutely have to have a solid pair of polarized glasses. It kind of
talk about this a little bit, because there's different polarized glasses for different situations, right? I mean, for different clarity of water, different, like, how many different types of polarized glasses do we use here that you use? I mean, I'm talking about dark days, sunny days. I mean, this is just what I hear a lot of people, you know, and that's why we have so many options to choose from these days. And I imagine there's a reason for that.
I have just one pair of sunglasses that I use year round, everything. And luckily they're just a good pair of nine sunglasses. I think the lens color is actually called vermilion, but basically an amber lens. Like, in my opinion, if you had to get just one lens, an amber is the way to go. And even if it's not technically called amber, as long as it's close to an amber color, that's going to do best. I use glass lenses. Some people don't like glass lenses because it's more dangerous. If something were to break it, you know, you can slice your eye up and that's bad news. But it's more of a clear vision. Their glass is heavier, so your glasses are going to weigh more, which that can discomfort people. So you want to make sure they're comfortable if you're going to be wearing them all day. But glass amber lenses are pretty tough to beat when you're looking in the water, whether you're looking for beds or you're just trying to get some clues from looking in the water in general. That's if you had to get just one, that'd be it. And I have just one. I wish I had a selection of sunglasses for the different, you know, the cloudy days, sunny days, and different watercolors and this and that. And I understand the science behind the different lens colors and why they'd be used. But the ones I have get it done, and it's they get me through springtime just fine for sight fishing.
Right, right. So when we were looking at, when you look at fish on beds, like certain behaviors. So at that Saturday after the tournament, I went fishing again on Sunday, but I went up to kind of like a it's not a lake, but it's bigger than a pond. It's okay. You know what I mean? It's a good sized water, but it's not a lake. I mean, like, you know, I knew where to go, and so I went and looked, and I found just, I mean, like, this, I forget how awesome this place is. It's like, this place was designed for bass. The people that live around the lake, they're throwing things in the water. Like, I didn't realize it because it was finally clear enough for the first time in a long time that I saw it. I mean, there's man-made, you know, cover and everything. And so I'm just looking around and I'm finding bass everywhere. I'm sight fishing. I caught one or two. I caught a smallmouth out of nowhere. I don't know how it got in there, but it's not a smallmouth. Because I mean, it was really funny. I was fishing for, you know, it was a male and female that were around this bed. Mm-hmm. And I was throwing a shaky head. And then, like, all of a sudden, like, wham, I'm like, whoa. And then, like, this thing starts doing, like, backflips and cartwheels. And I'm like, what is this? And I pulled it in. I'm like, that's a smallmouth. And it was like an 18-inch smallmouth in a body of water that doesn't have smallmouths. So I'm curious if people are trying to make that place more diverse. But back to my point was, you know, I was watching some of the fish behavior, and like, I wonder, like, if there's a time where, like, just don't even worry about it. Cause there's one where, like, the fish were doing that weird thing when they're going upside down and it looks like they're actually trying to work some things out there. And I'm just like,
absolutely.
I'm like, leave those ones alone. Is there anything you're looking for? Like, that, you know, that a fish, you know, like they're in that place now where they're in like a protective, you know, state, you know, because like, let's say the ones I saw looked like they were getting shit done and getting.
Yeah, there's certainly things I'll look for. And I'm going to use this phrase a whole bunch probably if we're going to have this topic. But when I say I'm going to get a fish to go, it means I'm going to be able to fool that fish into biting and catch the fish. So If you hear me say, oh, I got that fish to go, it means I was able to get it to bite. So what I'm looking for when I'm trying to figure out which fish are worth actually stopping and, like, you know, pulling down and working on, or see if it, one, you just got to ask yourself if, you know, that the size is worth it. Right. And I guess it's different too if you're doing it just for fun versus a tournament too, as far as waste of time, because you can for sure waste a lot of time sight fishing on individual fish. It becomes personal after a while. I promise anyone who's done this like totally understands what I'm saying. Like, there are times, especially doing a tournament, you'll forget about the tournament and just get mad at the fish until you catch it. And there's almost a victory in that, even if it's an unusable fish for whatever reason. But I digress. So what you want to see, like, whenever I spot a fish, and like say if I'm cruising the shallow side fish and looking for a good one, and I just see a big one, I'm going to stop and watch it and see, even if I kind of spook it off and kind of scare it off, like, I'm still going to hang out or back off a little bit and see if I can see it come back to what might be a bed, or what sometimes I'm lucky enough to see that, okay, there's the bed it just left. And I'm going to see how long it takes to come back. The longer it takes that fish when it leaves the bed, the longer it takes for it to come back, the longer it's going to take for you to catch. So, you know, a fish that takes 25 seconds to swim around and come back to the bed, it's going to be more difficult than that fish that only takes 10 seconds. That's a really solid rule of thumb to use, as far as this one's going to be a while, and this one I can probably get to go pretty quick. If they barely move at all, that fish is probably really easy to catch.
Right.
Because they're so locked on to the bed and won't hardly leave. But usually what you'll see is a fish will leave the bed if you kind of spook it, or if it knows you're there. And it has like a little pathway. It's usually a loop or a figure eight that it will swim around the bed. And you need to watch that. Another thing to keep in mind, you want to see what the fish is like secondary spotted. Sometimes if it spooks off the bed, it wants to kind of hang tight off of something else. And so kind of be mindful of what that spot might be too. Also, watch out for, you don't want to block the fish's path to deeper water. Sometimes they want to be able to retreat to deep water where they can hide in the shadows or just out of eyesight of the water depth. That's, you don't always have that choice to not block that deeper water, but it's something to consider if it's a fish where you can get many different angles on it. So these are all the considerations, all the things I'm looking at before I even grab a rod, and I'm checking out the fish, seeing how long it stays away or hangs out on the bed, and just watching its mannerisms. Each fish is an individual fish and will behave differently than another. Two fish on the same bed can behave completely different. They usually do. Bass in general, like say in a spawning area or a spawning cove or a pocket, they'll usually do about the same thing or be on about the same schedule spawning wise, but still each fish has its own personality and will be a certain degree of angry where another one won't be. But if I see a good fish, one that I want to stop on, I'll pull down and I'll stand up and start throwing some baits into the bed and just working it through the bed and seeing how the bass reacts to it. And that's really where you start from, is you just kind of throw some stuff in the bed and see what kind of reactions you get from the fish. And there's all kinds of reactions you can possibly get.
Yeah. A lot of times, like, I kind of know, and like I said, I don't do this often, but when I have done it, like, I kind of knew like when I was going to get a bite, you know, like when that fish didn't move, or you watch it immediately, something lands on his bed, it picks it up and it moves it off. Whether you get the hook set, but these other ones, kind of what you said, and I'm glad you said it. They do that. Like, they got to, like, I would throw whatever I would flip in there. They would do this loop around and they'd come back around. And a lot of times if it was still there, they would do another, like, you know what I mean? Like, they knew, and it was weird because they weren't trying to protect it at all. They were just, I don't know. It's like they weren't committed, or someone's already ripped their face off a few times before.
That's happened. Know. Sometimes they feel that it's a foreign object that may not be a threat to the nest itself, but it just feels odd. But then after the idea is that after a while you want to make that fish angry enough to where it cares enough to remove it versus, hey, I don't mind if this fake object stays around as long as I don't actually see it eating, like, or trying to, you know, eat little eggs or something like that.
Right.
Sometimes you got to make them mad. So it's a pretty common thing in sight fishing to take a heavier lure, like a heavier jig. If a fish just is locked on the bed, but just won't eat it, sometimes you got to bump that fish like in the tail where it's been spawning, where it's been sore. Sometimes you got to kind of pop it in the head a little bit. It gets mad and it makes it turn around or it makes it do a 180. Like sometimes if you pop the fish in the tail, it'll do a 180. And then when it does that quick 180, you pop that jig up again and it'll eat it. And you know, when I say jig, you can use a Texas rig, any normal things, but you know, you can pop a heavier lure like that on a fish better than you can like a little light drop shot or something. But sometimes you got to get creative, and if the fish are so locked on but not eating, you almost have to physically pester them. The one of the analogies that I like to use is like, you know, when you're a kid and someone grabs your arm and is hitting you with it, it's like, why are you hitting yourself? Why are you hitting yourself? Like after about 4 seconds of that, you want to punch whoever's doing that, right?
Yeah, you start screaming and you're crying and you're punching and you're
you're
weird.
basically you're doing that to that fish. Like, I mean, it really is pestering the poor thing, but they don't have arms, so they can't like smack it away. So they got to take their mouth, which is their number one tool, and carry your bait off the nest or eat it. It's got to be one of the two eventually, and you just want to figure out the way to get them in that mood that they want to do that and be that aggressive.
Now, is there something you see that they kind of, I guess you would say, like what you usually have more success with as far as like what you're really throwing at them? Because one of the things that I like that I found, that, like, it was a shaky head, but it couldn't be a long. I had to, whatever I was going to use, the profile of the bait, I usually had to cut a quarter or half of it off, because it was the same thing. I mean, I was throwing this one floating worm or whatever it was. You know, I throw it, nothing. But the moment I cut it and I got it down to the right profile, the right size, you know, I was one after another. Like, I was just going up this bank, and I was just catching them. But they were very picky on what it was that was going to get them the bite. You know, and I tried a lot of things. You know, this year and last year when I started doing it. But for me, it's always been a shaky head or or something very, very finessey. Like, I haven't really had much success with a, you know, a jig or anything, but is there anything that you found that, like, for you, that, like, you're, like, kind of your go-to for, like, bait fishing?
Unfortunately, there's not just one thing. Like, they really do. I've seen the biggest lures be the only thing to get a fish to go, and then I've seen like the tiniest like portion of a Ned rig be the only thing to get a fish to go, and then everything in between. So I have a tackle box that's devoted just for sight fishing. And it's a pretty full one, and it's got a pretty vast array of different things in there. But they all have their time and place, and sometimes one single fish will see just about everything in that tackle box. But this year especially, a Tokyo rig's been really good to me. And I
I was
think
curious about that
the
Tokyo.
I'll go into that in a minute, because I learned some specific stuff on that that's pretty cool. But at the end of the day, just a plain Texas rig craw or a Texas rig creature bait is probably the best thing you can have out there. It's weedless, it's natural looking. You can put it right on the bed. Just a normal Texas rig with either a green pumpkin creature bait or a white creature bait if you want to see it, but the risk may be the fish identifying as unnatural more. That's probably accounted for the majority of my catches. And then this year, that creature bait, like I said, this spring, it's morphed into the Tokyo rig more for me.
Dude, talking about that Tokyo, this is the first year I'm getting ready to go to Candlewood to compete. And like this, I'm breaking the Tokyo rig out this time. I got some ideas for it, but like, I'm kind of curious, like, especially even with like bed fishing, like it has, I mean, it's like a beefier, drop shot, if that makes any sense.
That makes it, well, that's basically what it is, right? And when I, you know, learned about the Tokyo rig a couple of years ago, it was heavily advertised as like something to flip into grass, or basically as an alternative to flipping. And the little bit that I tried using that, I wasn't crazy about it. I'd just rather, you know, use a traditional flipping rig, and that worked fine for me. And so that Tokyo rig kind of set my tackle box and didn't get used for a couple of years. Well, when I, you know, a drop shot is notoriously used on beds for catching bass off of beds. It works great, and you should do it. But so often those bass are around heavy cover, or maybe it's a really big bass, and throwing a drop shot rig is a finesse, lightweight thing. And so you could beef up the line and beef up the hook, but now you're basically at a Tokyo rig, right? Now, here's why the Tokyo rig is better, in my opinion, than just a beefed up bop, drop shot, which I just call a Bubba shot, using bigger hook and line. Is that Tokyo rig, the way they build it, it can swivel, and so it has a more free swinging action. And the way that I've used that to my advantage, and one, you can just set the hook on them. I mean, it's all, metal components, so you can do a big hook set. You don't got to worry about breaking off or anything, and throw it with a bait caster. But I've paired it with any number of different Z-Man, like the Elastec, that floats. And so what'll happen is you've got this floating bait, and when I twitch the line, it's the bait, instead of coming towards me, wants to kind of like kiss the bottom, like kiss the bed, and it looks like a bluegill's trying to eat,
Pecking at it,
pecking at it. That's exactly what it looks like, and you can make it just peck there in place. And that something about that floating Z-Man stuff, as opposed to just throwing any other random plastic on that Tokyo rig. I've watched it get fish to go that just otherwise wouldn't. It really has made a difference for me this spring. I don't really feel like I'm giving up anything, because like it's such a narrow window of time, and you can do it, and you still got to find the fish before you even get to, working with a Tokyo rig. But that's by far been my most productive and my go-to, and it's caught my big ones this year too, the ones that I had to work on the most. Like, it seemed like that Tokyo rig got it done and got me some good hook sets, and so that's for sure been my go-to. It's been fun using it.
Well, I bet, like, not just because the pecking, but I mean, it probably creates, when I played around with it, like, it creates a little bit of disturbance on the bottom more than, like, you know what I mean? Like, it can get messy, like, if you
And
do it right.
what I'll do is I'll use it. Some people just put like one weight on the sliding bar where you put the weight on the Tokyo rig, right? It doesn't make sense to anyone listening. Just Google Tokyo rig, and you'll see what I'm saying. Well, I put two, instead of putting a 1/4 ounce weight on there, I'll put 2 1/8 ounce weights on there, and those two weights will click when you're twitching it, and it gives a little noise appeal. And it actually makes it a little more slender too, doing it that way, the way I have it. Maybe I can try to provide you a photo or something after this and see what I'm talking about. But man, that combo, just a Elastec on a Tokyo rig, really, really productive.
Cool. Well, cool, man. Like, I want to go back. I want to go into, doing this kind of fishing during tournaments. But before we do that, we talked about it before, but, like, what's your setup as far as, like, the power pole? Because it was really cool, like what you showed me. And eventually I'm gonna get it. I might get it now, with the cash, or the checks I've been cashing lately.
You
But
should.
yeah, but, like, talk about your setup, because, it's not just about the fishing pole, the lures. It's your whole setup. Like, you're able to commit to to sight fishing.
Yeah, so it's a big thing to be able to, once you've got a fish you want to work on, to stay completely still, whether you're hugging a bank or sometimes you don't have the luxury of kind of leaning on a tree or something to kind of camouflage yourself. Sometimes you're really exposed, but either way, you've got to be completely still, which means your boat has to be completely still. And the way I do it, I don't have like a power pole or a micro power pole or anything like that. That's also extra weight, and sometimes you get into these shallows, and that it gets harder to get into that. But what I do have is I use two Yak Attack Omega rod holders, and I angle them to where they're completely vertical, and I'll take two Yak Attack park poles. I think I have the 8 footers, and I'll just manually shove them through the rod holder straight into the mud or the silt or the dirt, whatever I'm in. If I'm in just straight rock, then I can't pull down, and I've got to get real creative, or sometimes just can't do it at all. But most of the time, it's silty enough that, like at Hartwell, there's a few places where I was pulling down, and it was maybe an inch of mud, so like it wasn't gripping too well, but just a little bit would keep me in place for at least a few moments before a gust of wind might unanchor me for a moment, and I'd have to re-anchor. But that's a really lightweight, really inexpensive way to go about giving yourself two separate, one on the left side, one on the right side of my kayak, two separate anchor points, to where if it's just one anchor point, you can still pit it in the wind, but the two anchor points, much like you'd see on a bass boat, allows you to be completely still that way. And the cool thing is you can take those the rod holders, the Omega rod holders, and put them on any type of track mount system, or the
Right.
Hobie H-Rail system, and you can make your anchoring point different to what you may need to do. So it's a versatile way to do it too. You're not committed to just an anchor in the back with a power pole. So it's a lightweight, efficient way to do it. And I would not catch the majority of my fish if I wasn't able to anchor down that way.
Yeah. We're going to have to really show people what that is. I mean, like you texted me all the pieces and stuff, and it's going to happen. But yeah, I mean, it's a cool thing. It's a cool way to fish, and I know there's some benefits to it, but like one of the problems I'm having, like, is that I know, like, we're in that weird phase right now where the fish are moving on beds. And I got a big tournament come up this weekend at Candlewood. So I know, and we just, this week has been just perfect. Like 70, 75 degrees, water temps are getting up to the 60s. Like they're going to be their own beds or coming off beds. And I imagine there's going to be, it's going to be a mixture of probably all, some pre-spawners, spawners and post-spawners, but you're going in a tournament like, and trying to do something that's going to be efficient and trying to do something that you can count on. It's hard for me to think about something like bed fishing because last time I tried to bed fish in a tournament, one of my friends, he bed fished up north. I did down south. I tried to beat the wind. The wind came in and it screwed my whole plans up. And then, I wasted like four hours.
It's a gamble. Even as a lone cloud that blocks the sun just for 30 minutes can make it to where you can't fish for fish. So there's way more things that can go against you than go for you. Like, for example, at Hartwell this past week, like the story I've been telling my friends is that on day one during the tournament, I'd found a giant on a bed in practice, and I was working on her, and I had a lousy hook set on her during day one of the tournament, and I dumped her again on a big swim bait, and then time ran out on day one, so I was like, I'm going to go back, and I got to get her on day two. I get there on day two, and the boat dock that she was spawning next to, the owner was doing his once a year annual power washing on the boat dock. And so it was complete. It was like not going to happen for me to fish for that fish. So if you for a tournament consideration, go all in on sight fishing. You better have a bunch of beds marked
right
to where you can strike out on most of them. It's kind of like a batting average in baseball. If you're batting like 275 or 280, you're doing really well. Like, you're hitting them, and I feel like it's kind of the same thing with if you're trying to tournament bed fish. Like, you better be prepared to not catch or mess up or waste a lot of time and hope that you can really get five good ones out of a whole bunch of them.
Yeah, well, my friend that won that tournament, like, it was a three fish tournament. He was lucky it was a three fish tournament because it took him almost the whole tournament to catch those three fish.
Those three.
There was more fish that he kind of went after, but he went after the big fish.
He knew those mattered, right? He knew those were the ones that were going to give him the money or the win.
Right. And I think that's one of the things that, like, I'm sort of changed my approach to a lot of tournaments, and it's kind of helped me out. It's making a decision where, like, all right, if this doesn't work out, I'm probably going to lose really bad. But if it does work out, there's a good chance I'm going to win. And when I think about when I'm in this, like, I'm not in this to do good. Like, I'm in here to cash a check. That's the only
victory. You got to go for it.
Yeah, it's the only victory in this sport. I'm not saying I got to be first. I'm saying I got to be in the money. And so, like, making these choices that were like, they're a little more, like, I'm putting my eggs in like one or two baskets, but it's like, but that's the only way I'm going to catch.
They're the right baskets. If you can get that basket home, then that's the one. That's part of it, man. Ain't that part of the fun of the sport is, like, swinging big, zero hero type of thing. But that's the truth of it. That's what it is. And the cool thing is, once you find some success in taking those gambles, the confidence and for the future times when you're forced to make that decision, not only will you have the confidence to go for it, but you'll make the right decision and the better decision in order to get there. So I encourage you or anyone, like, if you're like, I did that for years, like fishing safe and fishing just to get the limit or fishing just for points. And it's a totally different approach, like going for just bigger bites and or knowing that you're either going to get the right bites or maybe only not even a limit's worth of the right bites in there. So it's a gamble. That's what it is. But once you learn how to dance around that gamble and kind of claw your way to that end goal there, it, man, it's worth it. It's fun.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm going in this tournament, you know, I'm gonna get a few days to pre-fish. I mean, let's just talk about you. Like, you know, if you go on a lake and it's just this weird time of the year where fish could be, there's just these three phases they could be in. It's just the way it is. Is it just like during the pre-fish, like you're going to look, I mean, obviously what I'm going to do, I'm going to go back to where the fish are good spawn and start from there. I'm going to work my way out and try to come up with a plan from that. And then, if, you know, try to figure out, dude, are they on the beds? What kind of fish are on the beds? Is it worth investing the beds, or should I be looking for post-spawn fish, or should I be looking for, you know, are there still fish that are pre-spawning? How much time, like, what do you really think about when you're going to these tournaments? Like, what, like, I mean, like, there's
really when I know it's the time of year when, like, you got the multiple phases, or maybe like all three of them are happening, but it's like more of a pre-spawn, or more of a, they're all on beds, or, you know, right now, you know, out here on the lake today, I felt like most of them had wrapped up and been done, but there's some fry garters hanging out. I'll tell you what, the one common thing for me, no matter what stage of those three they're in, I'm looking for an excuse to throw top water. They eat all of them, man. There's like a couple pre-spawn topwater lures that they really get after, and same with when they're on beds or when they come off of beds. But man, they tend to look up, and even if I don't get them to commit, just seeing them swipe or going after it can kind of get them to show themselves. So I get so many of my clues and catches and excitement during the springtime when the spawns happen by fishing topwater. Multiple different top waters, but that's honestly what I would do. I would be throwing a couple different top waters until I got the clues that I wanted to get, and take it from there.
So using that top water is kind of like a search bait, like kind of figuring out.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know, I mean, like, yeah. I've heard people say that, you know, like.
Or, you know, I would just as much use it for if I'd actually see the fish, or I know, like, okay, they're bedding on bushes in this pocket right here. Like, and I don't even have to see the fish, but I know that they're probably betting on that certain target or object. I'll use top water as like a very precise target casting thing, like you would, you know, flip a jig into a very specific stump or a piece of cover. I'll do that with top water, but in the same respect, I may be like kicking my Hobie around, moving covering water, throwing a buzz bait, just kind of almost indiscriminately to see how easy I can get a bite to you. So that's, you know, me seeing topwater, that encompasses a lot of different techniques and styles. But for some reason, those fish, when they're shallow, because they're mostly going to be shallow, I'm talking 3 foot or less, like, and really clear water fisheries, they'll spawn deeper than that. And getting them to come up out of deeper than 3 foot or so can be kind of a chore, and not something I would encourage when they're spawning. But man, as far as shallow water covering, man, top water gets it done. It really does. Both bites and clues, both.
Yeah, it's really weird. I was watching, I think Jeff Little, he put out a video of Russ Snyder, like, covering water with just buzzbait moving like at 12, 15 miles an hour, just covering water. I don't know if that's the best way to do it, but I mean, I'm not going to say anything when Russ Snyder does it.
I can tell you this much. I'm fortunate enough to fish with that guy very often, and trying to emulate his power fishing when he's trying to cover water and figure out a bite, good luck. He was out fishing me at a pace that I could never try to keep up with before he got his new Torquedo, and he just got the new Torquedo a week or two ago. And you would almost think he's not being serious, though how fast he's like fishing around. Like, oh, he can't actually be covering water, but he really is. He really is.
Yeah, I'm not going to doubt anything that man does.
No, right? You shouldn't.
Yeah. All right, well, cool, man. I appreciate you coming on the show. Dude, what's up next for you? I mean, like, your season's been – like, my season's just started. You know, I've been doing tournaments every weekend, you know, but like, it's still really early in my season. What do you got coming up? Are you doing any traveling? Are you coming up north at all? I know Hobie's coming up here to Lake Champlain. I know we got the Susky in July. What's the plans for you right now, Adam?
Man, I would love to be. Champlain is like right at the top of my bucket list places. I really doubt I'll make it there this year. I'm not planning on getting up there this year, so I doubt I'll make it. But I'm really going to try to when I do get the chance. I've just got Sam Rayburn, Hobie BOS. Sam Rayburn is a week or two from now. I'm going to try to spend the whole week down there because that's another absolute bucket list destination fishery for me. So not only do I want to get down there and to figure out the bite, I just want to have fun and catch some big ones, because that's where you can catch your personal best fish down there. And
Right.
anytime I've fished in Texas, it's done nothing but showed out for me. So gonna get down there here pretty soon. And then after that, I think most of my summer isn't doing too much traveling, no more than like a 2-hour radius or so, a little bit of Tennessee River stuff. At some point I'll go up to La Crosse and do a tournament up there. I can't remember what that is. That may be even into summer or late summer, but for the most part,
August, right? The BOS.
I think so. Yeah. That's probably it. But you know, most of June and July, like, I'm going to be around the greater Nashville area with, just, you know, a few exceptions. So doing some club tournaments and, some guide trips, but, for the most part should be, back home. It was such a busy spring. This was by far my most traveling spring. I enjoyed it. Again, it's what I wanted to do, but it's going to be good to be home and get some work in and still be able to fish a good bit as well. But yeah, be home after a little bit. But Texas is in the eyesights.
Right. Well, let me ask you this, because like I was thinking about that. I want to ask you this earlier. You know, like, just knowing that you played in bands and used to tour across the country and stuff. How much? I mean, like, I'm looking, because like you're doing that now. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I think about guys like you a lot. Like, it's like, you know, like, you guys have been gypsies your whole life, and like, you know, coming from the scene that we came from, like, we were very minimalist. We were ready to live in vans and live dirty and share hotel rooms with friends. And you're still, I feel like you're still doing that. And you're, you know, as you're getting into an older, like,
you're totally right. The parallels are very present to me. I'm very aware of how many similarities there are. And it's funny you say that, Josh, because like, staying with Cody Milton this last week, that dude literally lives out of his van on the road, you know, Russ living out of his truck too. And I watch these guys, and I'm like, these guys would do just fine on my old punk rock tours. Cause yeah, you know, they're fine with roughing it. Like, you know, they're nomadic and can hang and figure out what they need to do anywhere and make the best of it and keep the right attitudes in order to do that. That's a huge thing, man. You stay on the road for a long time, you get away from comforts and amenities or, family and friends, and you got to be able to have some mental toughness, because you're going to run into a lot of mishaps and bad luck and misfortune and accidents and money that you weren't planning on spending. So it is far from glitz and glamour and glory out there. The glory is few and far between, and
right.
It usually just comes during an award ceremony and a paycheck, and then it's right back to work and right back to grinding. So it's very much the same. But we wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't our passion and it wasn't like right. what we were into. And if we didn't get some fulfillment from it, you know, that's why you see us out there doing it, is because it is fulfilling. So it's worth it. But yeah, it kind of, you turn into a road dog after a while, and you know who right. the other road dogs are too, because you'll see them in one city, and then next thing you know, it's 16 hours drive later, and you see him in the back of a pocket out of a random lake, and that's the only place you'll ever see him again. So you see him in the back of a pocket of a random lake in another part of the country. And
or a gas station eating a hot dog or something like that.
A gas station, or what used to be like backstage at a venue. Now it's like, you know, the backwaters of a creek that, you know, you both agreed was a good creek worth fishing. So, yeah, it's a trip thinking how many of the things are similar there. It really is.
Well, cool, man. I appreciate you coming on. It's always great to talk to you, man. You're one of my favorite guests. And you were the perfect person to talk to about this, 'cause I've heard you talk about it before. So, I don't know. Hopefully people get something out of this, a little something they can put in their toolbox for later on. But, man, I really do appreciate you coming on the show. Is there anyone you want to thank or anything that you got going on that you want to put out there?
Man, I'll give a solo shout-out to Stormy at Dakota Lithium. He really stepped it up big for us this past week at Hartwell. And
my new sponsor now.
No, is it really? That's yeah. awesome. What yeah. up? What up, Stormy? And shout out to Dakota Lithium, man. They really are making a lot of cool efforts and making waves in our kayak community and way beyond the kayak community. But I get extra excited when I see the people reaching down and taking care of the kayakers who are out there doing hard. And just like they take care of us, man, those batteries get it done for me. I've got the 18 amp hour that powers a 7-inch Humminbird Helix, and I love that size because it allows me to go a couple days without a charge running full power, and I ain't got to worry about it, because there's, on the rare occasion, like if you're road tripping or something, you may not get a charge in. So having a battery that you don't have to charge every single day, that I've really enjoyed having that one and the reliability, lightweight of it. So I'm gonna say Dakota Lithium, and that's awesome that they've you're partnering up with them too. Way to go.
Yeah, I feel like I made it. All right, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show. I'll talk to you again. Hopefully, I'll see you in lacrosse or something like that. I need to get down
Yeah.
south eventually.
Come
I was
on.
going to this year. I know. I got to. No excuses. So, anyways, dude, enjoy your night. I'll talk to you again soon. All
Thanks, Josh.
right, brother. What's up, friends? Welcome back to the Dark Waters. I'm your host, Josh. It's Tuesday night. Not much going on this week. Not much going on right now. I got big things coming up this weekend. I'm driving to Connecticut on Thursday to compete on Candlewood Lake. The KBF event is going to be held there this weekend. I know a lot of my friends are going to be there. Looking forward to seeing everyone. Absolutely nervous about this whole event. I have no idea what's going to happen. I know it's a busy, busy lake. There's like two big boat tournaments. Now I'm hearing there's another kayak. I don't know. It's going to be nuts. Hopefully I'll be able to figure some shit out over the 2 days of pre-fishing. It's also weird up here. Like fish are, some of them are still pre-spawning. Some of them are spawning. Some are coming off beds. I don't know what it's going to be like this weekend, but I'm excited. Mainly just to see everyone. I know, a lot of the Northeast guys are showing up, Derek Brunel's going to be there, Matt Connett, Kim Wood, Jason Gardner, Adam Rourke, my dog Nate, just a bunch of cool people, man. Just looking forward to seeing everyone. But that's what my weekend's going to look like. Had a pretty good weekend. Competed in the local event up here, Slay Nation event on Otisco Lake. Did all right. I came in 11th. Had some struggles. It was a tough day, but I got a limit. I got some things I got to work on, some things I got to figure out. But dude, that's how the sport is, man. So no complaints. Just gonna move on to the next one. But man, dude, I can't complain much. I've already cashed two checks this year, so I needed to maybe I need to be humble just a little bit. I don't know. I get a big head sometimes. Anyways, man. Congrats to everyone who competed down this past weekend at the Hobie event down in South Carolina. Dude, come back. Dude, it seemed like a good event. I know I'm stuttering. I'm sorry. It's Tuesday night. I've been drinking. But yeah, man. Congrats to Kat Fields. She didn't get the money, but she got pretty goddamn close. And, I've been following her journey for a long time. In fact, I think my podcast, the first one she's ever done. And it was just, it was great to hear how good she did and seeing her progress into the angle she is. And, her journey is an amazing journey, and she's such a special person. So I look forward to sharing a beer with her one day. But anyways, let's figure some shit out. So first off, I got a new sponsor, Dakota Lithium. Stormy, thank you so much for investing in my podcast. I look forward to working that relationship. I can now say I am powered by Dakota Lithium. No discount codes or anything like that right now. Well, it's a new relationship. We're working on some stuff. He's going to be at Candlewood this weekend, so I'll get to talk to him. But Sticks Fishing, can't say enough about those guys. They take great care of me. They take great care of this podcast. They make six rods to cover all your techniques and lures. They take out the middleman. These rods are greatly designed, affordable. To me, they're perfect. At least for me, for people who need like those specific details, I get it. But for someone like me, these rods get the job done. And they've been doing great for me this year. So make sure you check them out. Use discount code DARKWATERS. Get yourself a discount. They got a 90-day buy them, try them, which means if you don't like them, you send that shit back. But you're going to love them. They're going to love them. These are good made rods. Check out, X-Zone Lures. Capital D, capital W 15, get yourself some discount on some great plastics, good colors, man. Dude, they got some great, great looking baits, man. Right now I'm a big fan of the Deception Worm and the Finesse Worms, and Yeah, dude, been catching a lot of fish on the Shaggy Head right now. That's been like my go-to right now. And dude, just check them out, dude. Everything floats over there. It all floats down here. You know what I mean, dude? I mean, I am goofy tonight. Anyways, yeah, check them out. Last but not least, Rogue Fishing Company. Don't lose your shit this year. There's nothing like dropping your phone at the bottom of a lake. It's life changing. It's life changing because now you got to get off the lake. You got to go to Verizon. You got to buy a new phone. You got to tell your wife that you're buying a new phone. She's going to talk shit, and you deserve to get shit talked about. So avoid all that bullshit and just get a fucking lanyard or tethered and don't lose your shit because Josh said so. Use discount code DARKWATERS there too. Get yourself a discount on some gear saving shit. So my next guest, Adam Reiser. Dude, I've had him on the show so many times, but he's a great guy. Fun to talk to, knows his shit, great angler. In this episode, we kind of talked about not bed fishing, but more like sight fishing, which is kind of like bed fishing, but it's just like, you know, it's a technique, it's a skill. It's something that I've been thinking about a lot lately because, you know, you can win a tournament on a bed, but you got to lose it on there too. So I want to talk to someone, bring someone here who knew what they're talking about. We went over it, shared some of our stories. He shared some of his, like, his approaches and techniques, and it was a good episode, man. We also bullshitted, like, believe it or not, like, me and Adam, like, we didn't know this. We found out a few weeks ago that we've been in the same circles for most of our lives. In fact, I booked his band, his hardcore band, Love is Red. I booked them to come play in Panama City when we were like 16, 17 years old. So, like, we've been in these same circles for a very long time. It's kind of crazy how we it's come around, and here we are fishing together now. But yeah, dude, it's life is weird, man. And, the world's smaller than what we think it is, but, yeah, dude, great guy, great conversation. Make sure you check him out. But yeah, guys, sorry, weird intro. It's Tuesday night. I'm tired, been drinking, about ready to go to bed. But I'm looking forward to seeing everyone at Candlewood this weekend. Everyone else there, let me know what's going on. Tag me, share your picture, whatever. I love hearing from you guys, but that's it for tonight. I'll talk to you guys again soon. Ciao.